top stories this hour. The beleaguered British Prime Minister Boris Johnson resigns after facing a massive revolt within his Conservative Party. Scotland's First Minister Nicola Sturgeon says Boris Johnson should not be allowed to stay on as Britain's caretaker Prime Minister after tendering his resignation. And the Islamic Revolution Guard Corps intelligence unit says a number of foreign diplomats were committing acts of espionage under diplomatic cover. Hello and welcome to World News here in Iran's capital. Thank you for joining us. A wave of resignations and a wholesale revolt of the cabinet have forced the British Prime Minister to step down as the ruling party's leader.
It is clearly now the will of the Parliamentary Conservative Party that there should be a new leader of that party and therefore a new Prime Minister. And I've agreed with Sir Graham Brady, the chairman of our backbench MPs, that the process of choosing that new leader should begin now. And the timetable will be announced next week.
Boris Johnson was speaking outside number 10 Downing Street. He said he tried to persuade his colleagues to change their minds. Johnson expressed regret his efforts did not work. He said he will stay on as caretaker prime minister until a new leader is chosen for the ruling party. But a growing number of his party's members are calling for Johnson's immediate exit. A Conservative lawmaker says Johnson is, quote, too toxic. He says Johnson should be replaced with a new prime minister as soon as possible. The UK Foreign Secretary has also reacted to the resignation, saying Johnson has made the right decision. The wave of resignations was triggered on Tuesday, inflicting a snowball effect on Johnson's leadership in less than 48 hours. The resigning minister cited Johnson's culture of scandals for their decisions.
The UK Prime Minister fought as hard as he could, but he finally gave in. Boris Johnson has resigned as the Conservative Party leader. This will pave the way for a successor to replace him as a British Prime Minister, after over 50 of his ministers quit the government. He will, however, continue as Prime Minister until autumn. A Tory leadership race will take place this summer, and the winner will replace Johnson by October. Boris Johnson's premiership plunged into crisis following the dramatic resignations of Chancellor Rishi Sunak and the Health Secretary Sajid Javid. Javid, who served as the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, made reference to Johnson's failed leadership as the reason for quitting his post.
And now this week again, we have reason to question the truth and integrity of what we've all been told. And at some point, we have to conclude that enough is enough. Yeah. I believe that point is now.
Further resignations have followed, with the Education Ministers Will Quince and Robin Walker and Ministerial Aide Laura Trott quitting.
He had scandal after scandal, miscalculation after miscalculation. He's lost the confidence of, I assume, the country, going by the recent by-election results. And more recently, he's lost the confidence of many senior members of his government, with over 40 of them now resigning.
Johnson was under mounting pressure after apologizing for appointing MP Christopher Pincher to a role involved in offering pastoral care to his party, even after being briefed that the politician had been the subject of complaints about sexual misconduct.
He knew the accused minister had previously committed predatory behavior, but he promoted him to a position of power anyway. Why?
They're looking at the future. They're looking at the next Conservative government being returned in 2024. I believe they feel that won't happen with Boris Johnson at the helm. Therefore, people are jockeying for position. The knives are out. It's a Caesar and Brutus type political ending of his career.
While the current UK government has been plagued by many scandals which appear to stem from the Prime Minister himself, the latest crisis comes at a very sensitive time. The country is grappling with a massive economic crisis, from inflation to rising energy and fuel costs. The IMF and OECD have both said Britain is more susceptible to recession and persistently high inflation than other Western countries.
Prime Minister Boris Johnson and the scandals that surrounded him drowned his political life, and he found himself to have fallen out of favor with the general public in the UK. Prior to his resignation, a snap YouGov poll had found that 69% of Britons thought that Johnson should step down as Prime Minister. The timing of his resignation could not be any worse. The UK is experiencing a cost of living crisis like no other time in its history. Many Britons are struggling to cope with rising fuel and food prices. Economists say that the country is now heading for a sharp slowdown or possibly a recession.
He is, for his own political, selfish purposes, been running this country's economy into the ground, and worse, far worse, he has been threatening a peace process. That's all I've got to say.
And things will get much, much worse before the next general election. And I think regardless of who wins that election, we will continue to see an economic crisis.
Now with a new administration set to take the helm in September or in early October, the real concern for the UK is how it will cope with the economic crisis until then. This is not to dismiss the fact that there are no guarantees that the new administration will be able to deal with the economic onslaught that will be piled on it.
I'm sickened myself and furious about that.
The leader of Britain's opposition Labour Party has called on Boris Johnson to step down immediately as Prime Minister and not to stay on until the Tories choose his successor.
He needs to go. He can't cling on in this way. His own party have finally concluded that he's unfit to be Prime Minister. They can't now inflict him on the country for the next few months.
Starmer said if the Tory party, in his own words, doesn't get rid of Johnson, then Labour will bring a vote of no confidence against him. Starmer said changing the person at the helm of the Conservative Party is not enough and that the whole British government needs to change. Scotland's First Minister Nicola Sturgeon has made a blistering attack on the UK Conservative Party and Boris Johnson after the embattled Prime Minister announced his resignation. She says Johnson should not be allowed to remain in office, even as caretaker premier.
I think first and foremost there will be an overwhelming and very widespread sense of relief today that Boris Johnson's time as Prime Minister, which should probably never have been allowed to happen in the first place, is coming to an end. I do think it is quite incredible, though, to suggest that he will remain as Prime Minister for another 3 to 4 months. I think the sooner he is out of Number 10, and preferably that is today, the better. Look, if there is a general election, which I think would be in the interests of the UK as a whole right now, then I will fight, as leader of the SNP, that election on the basis of, you know, should Scotland be an independent country. That said, I think the reality is there's not going to be an early general election. A new Tory leader, new Prime Minister is obviously going to want time to establish themselves and presumably to repair some of the damage, the very deep damage that Boris Johnson has done to the Conservative Party, although they have allowed him to do that. So yet again, I suspect we're going to see the interests of the Conservative Party take priority over the interests of any part of the UK. So much as I would relish the opportunity of a general election, much as I think many people across the UK would relish the opportunity to kick out this rotten Conservative government, I don't think it is at all likely that we will see an early general election.
Earlier, we were joined by our London correspondent, Rob Carter, who detailed us on some of the reactions regarding Boris Johnson's resignation.
From mainstream circles, obviously, now that the Prime Minister has stepped down, they've rallied to kind of change the tune of the coverage. So obviously they're trying to be generous to the Prime Minister, focus on his achievements rather than his many scandals. But ultimately, I think the majority of the British public will be very pleased to see him finally go. You know, this has possibly been one of the most scandal-stricken prime ministers that we've had in recent years. And obviously, he's clung on to power on numerous occasions where, again, it was hoped that he would accept the inevitable and be gracious and step down and give someone else a chance at the leadership. But it's taken until now, and basically a huge rebellion by his own party to basically force him out of the position. If he was a leader from times past, he probably would have had to have been removed by some kind of civil war or something. That type of man that we were dealing with. But finally, he's gone. So everyone is now looking to who could potentially take over. That is a very big question.
We've also talked to London-based correspondent Said Pourreza to get an update on the political developments in the wake of the UK Premier's resignation. He told us about those who may be able to replace Boris Johnson. Let's take a listen.
What is going to happen, perhaps, is there is a number of names, up to nine names that have been tabled over the past few days and prior to that as well. Among them, for example, people such as Sajid Javid, the former health secretary, or the former chancellor Rishi Sunak, Liz Truss, the incumbent foreign secretary, and a number of other people who might take over from Boris Johnson as leader of the Conservative Party and become the next prime minister. But as I say, he is still here. He has put together a new cabinet and says he's going to wait until a new leader of the party is picked by the Conservative Party. The opposition, however, mainly the chief opposition Labour Party leader, Keir Starmer, saying he is going to seek a no confidence motion in Parliament, meaning technically that they will discuss how they can get the 1922 committee, that is basically a super committee made up of the powerful so-called backbenchers in the UK Parliament, in the Conservative Party, to cut that grace period between two no-confidence votes short, which is a period of 1 year, to much shorter, so they can hold a new confidence, a no-confidence vote, and get rid of Boris Johnson immediately.
Senior Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh says his meeting with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has ushered in a new chapter in the Palestinian struggle against the Israeli regime. Head of the Hamas Political Bureau noted that he did not hesitate to respond positively to Algeria's invitation for him to sit down with the Palestinian president. He told President of the Algerian National Assembly Salah Gujil that Palestinians were very welcoming of his meeting with Abbas, hoping it would boost unity. He said the liberation of Palestine will only materialize through resistance and unity. Gujil also noted that the issue of Palestine is key for Algeria, and that Algeria supports the Palestinian people's rights to establish an independent state which will have Quds as its capital. The Islamic Revolution Guard Corps says it has identified foreign diplomats and nationals committing acts of espionage in Iran. They include a British and an Austrian diplomat as well as a Polish national. Footage released by the IRGC shows they were spotted taking soil samples in restricted areas. One of them is Giles Whittaker, the UK Deputy Ambassador to Tehran. Whittaker and his family visited the central Shahdad desert as tourists, during which he was spotted collecting soil samples. Whittaker was also engaged in shooting photographs in a forbidden area. The illegal acts has happened just as the IRGC aerospace forces were conducting missile exercises in the vicinity. Whittaker was asked to leave the area after apologizing for his conduct. Also among those identified is the husband of Austria's cultural attaché to Iran and a Polish university professor. They were both caught on camera collecting samples. Early, we were joined by journalist and political commentator Sayed Mohsen Abbas. He says the foreign diplomats in Iran taking soil samples were abusing rules and regulations that come with sensitive military sites in any country.
This just goes from really bad to worse for the way the Anglo-Zionist Empire is trying to play kind of games with the Islamic Republic of Iran. This business of collecting soil, violating territories which are militarily sensitive, taking photographs. Of course, the allegations are coming thick and fast, but if all of these allegations are spot on, then this is very dubious behavior for diplomats who are trained to avoid precisely this kind of antagonistic behavior. But of course, we know that there are no diplomatic niceties when it comes to what the Israelis want done. And of course, when the Israelis want something done, certainly the British are one of the first to sort of jump to their tune. And it does seem really extraordinary that this party abused all of the kind of the rules and regulations that go with such sensitive areas. So it's extraordinary. Certainly, I see the hand of the Zionists behind all of this, because, of course, the backdrop is the JCPOA and the nuclear negotiations, something which the Israelis and the Zionist empire generally just doesn't want to happen. And they find every which way but loose as a way of trying to stagnate or circumvent any progress.
The secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council says lasting security in the Caucasus region requires sustainable peace there. Ali Shamkhani made the remarks during his one-day visit to the Armenian capital as part of his tour of the Caucasus region. Speaking to reporters upon arrival in Yerevan, Shamkhani underlined the need for the efforts to establish peace and stability in the region through intra-regional cooperation. Shamkhani said Iran is opposed to any scenario aimed at changing the geopolitics of the region. In a meeting with his Armenian counterpart, Shamkhani said Iran is ready to use all its capacity for sustainable peace in the South Caucasus. Armen Grigoryan, for his part, held Iran's role in securing peace in the region as well as Tehran's efforts for the expansion of ties among South Caucasus states. Iran slams the United States' human rights record, saying the country has committed the biggest crimes against humanity in history. The comments were made by the Secretary of Iran's High Council for Human Rights, Kazem Gharibabadi. He said the U.S. war on Iraq led to the death of more than 2 million innocent people, including 500,000 children. He said bombs dropped by American drones in seven countries have killed more than 48,000 people, rather. Gharibabadi also highlighted human rights violations inside the United States. He said every 4,000 people die while incarcerated in the States. The official censored the prevailing discrimination against the black people in the country. Gharibabadi said African Americans are generally looked down upon as criminals in the U.S. That's a wrap on the news broadcast. Thank you for tuning in.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Britain's Labour leader Keir Starmer says he will rebuild trust with the European Union on key areas of disagreement, such as the Northern Ireland Protocol, and get a better deal for the British people. We now present you an article written by Peter Walker. The piece is titled Starmer Ends Labour Silence on Brexit as he rules out rejoining single market. Keir Starmer has thrown the Labour Party back into the Brexit debate by ruling out any return to the single market or customs union, but arguing he could remove trade and travel barriers as Prime Minister because the European Union would trust him. In a speech on Monday evening, 4th of July, that ended Labour's habitual silence on the subject since the referendum, Keir Starmer pledged to tackle what he called a fatberg of red tape and bureaucracy caused by Boris Johnson's Brexit deal. Starmer cast himself as an honest broker, able to reach better compromises on key areas of disagreement with the European Union, such as the Northern Ireland Protocol. Starmer told the Centre for European Reform think tank, although both sides wanted to reduce trade barriers between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK, The government's approach had eroded trust in the UK. He argued, Labour will change that. We will be the honest broker our countries need. We will get the protocol working and we will make it the springboard to secure a better deal for the British people. But the Labour leader argued that the big questions over EU membership, notably over the single market, customs union and free movement of people, were arguments of the past and could not be revisited. While the Shadow Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, made similar points in a speech on Brexit recently, Keir Starmer has faced criticism from some within the Labour Party for appearing wary of attacking Boris Johnson over the issue, in part because of his own political journey on the subject. Having previously pushed for a second referendum while campaigning to be Labour leader in 2020, Keir Starmer called for the return of free movement, then reversing his position a year later. The speech on Monday evening, 4th of July, brought criticism from the Scottish National Party, SNP and the Greens. But pro-EU Labour backbenchers praised Keir Starmer's approach, saying the only option was to try to make the current deal function better. The Labour leader set out a series of proposals to make Brexit work, notably over Northern Ireland, including a new veterinary agreement for agri-product trade, and a system for low-risk goods to enter Northern Ireland without checks. Other proposals include a scheme for the mutual recognition of professional qualifications within the European Union and a new policing and security arrangement with Brussels. The plan also offers flexible labour mobility arrangements for people making short-term business trips between the United Kingdom and the European Union and for musicians and artists embarking on tours. Keir Starmer said the current deal had created a hulking fatberg of red tape and bureaucracy, one that is hampering the flow of British business. He added, "We will break that barrier down, unclog the arteries of our economy and allow trade to flourish once more." However, he stressed that any debate on rejoining the European Union would be to look back over our shoulder and jeopardise public faith in politics. He added, "So let me be very clear, with Labour, Britain will not go back into the European Union. We will not be joining the single market. We will not be joining a customs union." Ben Bradshaw, the MP for Exeter and former minister who is a leading pro-EU voice in the Labour Party, said Keir Starmer's approach was absolutely right. Ben Bradshaw said, "There is no prospect of us rejoining the European Union, single market or customs union anytime soon, not least because Boris Johnson has so completely destroyed trust with our European neighbours that any such move would be on far worse terms than those we had before we left." He added, "However, there is plenty that we can do to reduce the enormous damage being done to our economy and our relationship with our allies by fixing the many problems with Boris Johnson's botched Brexit deal." Hilary Benn, who formerly chaired the Brexit Commons Committee and was another strong proponent of a second referendum, told BBC Radio 4, The World at One, that even rejoining the single market would require a public vote. He said, "And I have to tell you, in my view, there is absolutely no appetite for that whatsoever." Sarah Olney, the Liberal Democrat trade spokesperson, said Boris Johnson's deal, which Labour voted for, had done significant damage and there was a need for a pragmatic approach that works for the United Kingdom. In contrast, the Scottish Nationalist Party, said Keir Starmer, has strengthened the case for independence by bracing the Tories' hard Brexit. While the Greens said it was quite perverse of Keir Starmer to stick his head in the sand and insist he will make Brexit work. Boris Johnson's government has decided to press on with legislation to unilaterally rip up Northern Ireland's post-Brexit trade arrangements, inflaming tensions with Brussels. The legislation, which would unilaterally replace parts of a post-Brexit deal that was agreed in 2020 by Britain and the European Union, is due to be proposed to Parliament by No. 10 Downing Street. It will be sent to the Parliament's lower house for so-called second reading of the legislation. Last month, Britain had warned the European Union that it would not shy away from taking legal action to resolve post-Brexit trade tensions between the two sides. Britain's Foreign Secretary Liz Truss explained that the Brexit deal remained in place. However, London's priority was to protect a 1998 peace deal that Ireland, the United States and other countries have said could be put at risk by replacing parts of the Northern Ireland Protocol. Liz Truss said in a statement recently, "This legislation will fix the problems the protocol has created, ensuring that goods can flow freely within the United Kingdom while avoiding a hard border and safeguarding the EU single market." Liz Truss added, "A negotiated solution has been and remains our preference, but the European Union continues to rule out changing the protocol itself, even though it is patently causing serious problems in Northern Ireland, which therefore means we are obliged to act." Earlier reports said the British government planned to trigger Article 16 of the Brexit deal to pull out. The Telegraph recently reported that Liz Truss had put on hold any plans to trigger Article 16 because of the Ukraine crisis. Article 16 of the Brexit deal allows either side to unilaterally decide to stop implementing parts of the Northern Ireland Protocol if there are substantial practical problems or trade diversions. Britain now plans to stop some checks on goods moving to Northern Ireland from the rest of the United Kingdom, and it is challenging the role played by the European Union's European Court of Justice. The European Commission has launched legal proceedings against the plan, potentially leading to a trade war.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhalladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of RIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagar.
We express our condolences to the Imam of our time and to all mu'mineen, mu'minat, and lovers of the Ahlul Bayt, salamullah alayhim ajma'in, on the occasion of the shahada of Imam al-Baqir, salamullah. وَصَلَوَاتُهُ عَلَيْهِ This great Imam, who among the 14 Ma'sumin has been a key component in our guidance that we as believers have received today in the various forms that we have received. And while Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the one who rewards Imam al-Baqir salamullah alayh and all of the Ahlul Bayt and all of the Anbiya and Ma'sumin and Sulaha, the righteous, God is the one that provides rewards for them. We ask Allah to make us following the teachings of these great imams, these great figures, these great leaders, as a reward for them seeing the effect of their work, as God has mentioned in the Quran. That's one of the rewards that God gives. We're asking that God make us part of that reward that He gives them, inshallah. Imam al-Baqir salamullahi alayhi has many aspects to discuss in terms of his personality, if we were to discuss that. His leadership during the years that he was the leader of the Muslimin after the Shahada of Imam Zain al-Abidin salamullah alayhi, up to the moment he took his last breath in this world. The events that took place in his life, the companions he had, and so on and so forth, there's plenty that can be discussed. What I'd like to discuss tonight is something related to Imam al-Baqir salamullah alayhi. We will study him and his efforts in the context of this greater theme. It's both one of his teachings, as it is a teaching that every single prophet and imam had at the focal point of their teachings, the foundation for everything else. But also something that we can see in ayah in the work of Imam al-Baqir salamullah alayhi. To see that what he did and the effect of it is an example, a sign that proves the truth of it, and we are in need of this. Because we are in need of believing it crystal clear 110%. We fail to do so. The teaching is very simple. The teaching is Tawheed. The teaching is the oneness of Allah. The teaching is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the one who is in charge, as we read in Surah Al-Baqarah, verse 255, I believe, Ayatul Kursi. وَسِعَ كُرْسِيُّهُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ لَهُ مَا فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَمَا فِي الْأَرْضِ. Before that it says, لَهُ مَا فِي السَّمَاوَاتِ وَمَا فِي الْأَرْضِ مَنْ ذَا الَّذِي يَشْفَعُ عِنْدَهُ إِلَّا بِإِذْنِهِ يَعْلَمُ مَا بَيْنَ أَيْدِيهِمْ وَمَا خَلْفَهُمْ وَلَا يُحِيطُونَ بِشَيْءٍ مِنْ عِلْمِهِ إِلَّا بِمَا شَاءَ وَسِعَ كُرْسِيُّهُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ وَلَا يَؤُودُهُ حِفْظُهُمَا. Every bit of that verse, everything belongs to him. The heavens, the earth, what's in the heavens, what dwells in the heavens, what dwells on the earth itself, the various, every bit of it actually belongs to him. And therefore, if anyone, anything is effective in regards to another being, another one of God's creation, it cannot do that illa bi'idhnih. مَنْ ذَا الَّذِي يَشْفَعُ عَنْدَهُ إِلَّا بِإِذْنِهِ. And these various beings, these human beings, us, يَعْلَمُ مَا بَيْنَ أَيْدِيهِمْ وَمَا خَلْفَهُمْ. He knows everything about us, what's before us, what's in front of us, what came before us, what's during our time, what's afterwards, the whole thing. He knows everything. He's in charge. He created it. He knows what he created. He knows what he is in charge of. He knows what he is doing to his creation. Therefore, he knows it all. يَعْلَمُ مَا بَيْنَ أَيْدِيهِمْ وَمَا خَلْفَهُمْ. Beneath, above, below, everything surrounding that being itself, inside, outside, above, below, material, spiritual, it's his. يعلم ما بين أيديهم وما خلفهم ولا يحيطون بشيء من علمه إلا بما شاء. On the other hand, us, we have zero knowledge of his, and all knowledge is his. There is no knowledge besides knowledge that's God's. And we have none of it. إِلَّا بِمَا شَاءَ Except the amount that he has wanted. Whatever we know is the amount he has allowed us to know. We would not know anything whatsoever if he didn't want us to. Whether it's the analysis of what we find through our senses or directly what we understand, what we sense through our senses, the rational, intellectual, mathematical, philosophical, physical, physiological, all that knowledge that's there in the form of the sciences, the philosophies, the humanities, literature, language, everything, all of that, we would not have known one bit of it. إِلَّا بِإِذْنِهِ or إِلَّا بِمَا شَاءَ except to the amount that he wanted. And that's all of us collectively and each of us individually. What humanity knows today, with all the developments in terms of the material and worldly sciences that it has developed, and of course the decline in all the other aspects, but in terms of understanding a certain aspect of the material world and how things work and how there's electric power in these various creations of God and the various forms that it can be produced in a sense or extracted in another sense. All of this is bima sha'a. Why didn't we learn this according to what they say, which is not accurate? I don't see any particular amount of time mentioned in the Quran about how many years it's been that human beings have been on earth. They say whatever thousand or thousands of years, whatever number of millennia we have been on earth before, according to them, we had the knowledge of writing, and after that, why after all these millennia, this particular time for mankind to learn these things, bima sha'a, every bit of it is bima sha'a. This is a very clear-cut teaching in the Qur'an, in the sayings of the Prophet, in the sayings of Fatima al-Zahra, in the sayings of Amir al-Mu'mineen, in the sayings of Imam al-Mujtaba, in the sayings of Imam al-Husayn, in the sayings of all of the Imams, including Imam al-Baqir, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Imam al-Baqir's efforts as an abd of Allah who did the impossible during his time, and it was effective, is an ayah, a sign, an example that shows us clearly this teaching is true. There's a time where we read something, a theory of reality, a teaching in this case, which is not a theory, it's a divine teaching. We read it. As a person reading this teaching, God is in charge. I read it, it makes sense. I read the reasoning for it, it makes sense. But like Ibrahim alayhi salam, that in the Quran, he asks Allah, he says, how do you bring to life the mawta? God says, أَفَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ Don't you believe? He said, yes, I believe. But لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي I want my heart not to have any... I don't want it to be shaky, a shaky type of belief. I know it. I don't have any questions regarding it. It's crystal clear. But seeing it, in other words, that's the point we're trying. Seeing it in action, seeing it, an example of it, is going to be different. It shows us. There's so many, of course, examples, but we are commemorating the Shahada of Imam al-Baqir, salamullah alayhi. I want to explain how what Imam al-Baqir did was the impossible. And for his work to be effective as it was very effective, is a clear example of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala doing what he wants. And we should learn from that. We should learn from Imam al-Baqir. He taught it and he implemented it. He didn't just teach it.
voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In Britain, the resignations of Rishi Sunak and Sajid Javid, both considered potential future UK leadership contenders, came at a critical moment for Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Elections to the 1922 committee executive in coming days are expected to strengthen the hand of rebels, hoping to call another vote of no confidence in Johnson's government. We now present you an article written jointly by Heather Stewart, Rowena Mason and Jessica Elgott. The piece is titled Sajid Javid and Rishi Sunak Quit, Throwing Boris Johnson's Future into Doubt. Please stay with us for more. In Britain, Boris Johnson's premiership was on the brink of collapse after the Chancellor Rishi Sunak and the Health Secretary Sajid Javid and a string of Conservative aides dramatically quit, dealing a crushing blow to his authority after a slew of self-inflicted scandals. Publishing damning resignation letters within minutes of each other, Rishi Sunak and Sajid Javid pointed to a lack of grip in Downing Street. The Prime Minister attempted to recover his authority by swiftly appointing Nadhem Zahawi as his Chancellor and Steve Barclay as the Health Secretary. But the credibility of the move was undermined as reports emerged that Zahawi had threatened to quit unless he got the job instead of Foreign Secretary Liz Truss during a power struggle in No. 10. The resignations of Javid and Sunak, both considered potential future leadership contenders, came at a moment of significant danger for Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Elections up to the 1922 committee executive in the coming days are expected to strengthen the hands of rebels who hope to call another vote of no confidence. There is growing expectation among MPs that there will be moves to change the rules to allow a second confidence vote before the summer recess begins on 21st of July, a feat previously seen as administratively impossible. In his resignation letter, the Chancellor Rishi Sunak said the public expected government to be conducted properly, competently and seriously. The Health Secretary Sajid Javid wrote in his resignation letter, "We may not have always been popular, but we have been competent in acting in the national interest. Sadly, in the current circumstances, the public are concluding that we are now neither." He added, "The recent vote of confidence showed that a large number of our colleagues agree. It was a moment for humility, grip, and new direction. However, I regret to say that it is clear to me that this situation will not change under your leadership, and you have therefore lost my confidence too." Rishi Sunak highlighted differences of opinion over economic management between him and Boris Johnson in the run-up to a joint speech the pair had planned next days. It will increase speculation that he has not given up on a run at the premiership. Sunak and Javid resignations were followed by several more junior Tories quitting, including Alex Chalk as Solicitor General, who said he could no longer defend the culture and course set on Boris Johnson's watch. Jonathan Gullis, a former ultra-loyalist, stepped down as a parliamentary private secretary, while Bim Afolami quit as vice chair of the party. Jonathan Gullis said, "I feel for too long we have been more focused on dealing with our reputational damage rather than delivering for the people of this country and spreading opportunity for all. It is for this reason that I can no longer serve as part of your government." Former Brexit Minister Lord Frost urged Boris Johnson to resign, warning in the Telegraph, "If he hangs on, he risks taking the party and the government down with him." He said other cabinet ministers now needed to consider whether they are truly happy with the current direction of travel. Lord Frost wrote of the Chris Pincher scandal, "Confronted with a problem which appeared to reflect badly on the Prime Minister's judgment, we saw once again the instinct was to cover up, to conceal, to avoid confronting the reality of the situation." Theo Clark, former trade envoy to Kenya and member of the Women and Equality Select Committee, said, "To learn that Johnson chose to elevate a colleague to a position of pastoral care for MPs, whilst in full knowledge of his own wrongdoing, shows a severe lack of judgment and care for your parliamentary party." Andrew Morrison, a former trade envoy to Morocco, strongly urged Boris Johnson to go, saying, "He cannot square Johnson's patronage with my personal sense of decency and honour." Sagar Bharti, former parliamentary private secretary to the health secretary, said, "My conscience will not allow me to continue to support this administration." Tuesday's walkouts followed an extraordinary intervention over the Chris Pincher scandal. On Tuesday morning, former Foreign Office Permanent Secretary Simon MacDonald made clear in an excoriating letter that Johnson had been briefed about an investigation into Chris Pincher, a former Deputy Chief Whip in 2019. That contradicted statements from Downing Street that Boris Johnson did not know about specific claims against Pincher before he quit last week amid charges of inappropriate affairs. During a febrile day in Westminster, MPs in the House of Commons were told Boris Johnson did not immediately recall that he had been informed about an investigation into Chris Pincher. The Prime Minister later conceded it had been a mistake to appoint Pincher as Deputy Chief Whip, a role that involves pastoral care of MPs. Boris Johnson said, "What I wanted was to give Chris Pincher, if not the benefit of the doubt, then the ability to prove that he could do better. And I'm afraid that he couldn't. And I feel very, very bitterly disappointed and also sorry for the mistake that I made." Throughout the day, a growing number of Conservative MPs, including some who had previously been supportive, said this latest incident had been the last straw. Andrew Morrison, a former Conservative minister, resigned as a trade envoy, saying, "Others must square, as best they can, their continuing enjoyment of your patronage with their personal sense of decency, honour and integrity, but I no longer can." In February, reflecting on your achievements, I wrote a supportive opinion editorial for The Guardian, in which I said that if you were obliged to leave office, you would do so with your head held high. I would no longer write in those terms. Rishi Sunak published his resignation letter just minutes after Sajid Javid, saying, "I'm sad to be leaving government, but I have reluctantly come to the conclusion we cannot continue like this." He added, "The public rightly expected government to be conducted properly, competently and seriously. I recognise this may be my last ministerial job, but I believe these standards are worth fighting for, and that is why I'm resigning." Bim Afolami said, "I think what's been very sad over the recent charges about the former Deputy Chief Whip and other things that have happened over the last few weeks is that I just don't think the Prime Minister has any longer not just my support, but I don't think the support of the party, or indeed the country, anymore. I think for that reason he should step down." Boris Johnson had earlier toured the House of Commons tea room hoping to shore up support among his backbenchers, but one MP said his message about the Pincher scandal had been "everyone deserves a second chance," a sentiment that did not go down well with some present. As well as his new roles for Zahawi and Barclay, Boris Johnson appointed the Universities Minister Michelle Donnellan as Education Secretary to replace Zahawi. Sources close to other cabinet ministers, including Liz Truss, Ben Wallace, Dominic Raab and Priti Patel, said they would remain in post, but rumours of more junior resignations continued to sweep through Westminster. The leader of the Labour Party, Keir Starmer, said, "If the ministers had a shred of integrity, they would have gone months ago. The British public will not be fooled. The Tory party is corrupted, and changing one man won't fix that. Only a real change of government can give Britain a fresh start that it needs."
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
A major benefit brought by Imam Khomeini was familiarizing people with the concept of resistance. This is the part of the speech delivered on June 4, 2022 by Imam Khomeini, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. On the 33rd demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini, greetings be upon him. In certain cases, we acted well and made achievements, and in certain cases, we showed negligence and laziness and weakness, and we naturally fell behind. This cannot be denied in any way. The school of thought, the plan and the path are correct. The path must be treaded correctly. We progressed, but in whichever area we showed laziness and negligence, we fell behind. There are many examples in the course of these days, both during the time of Imam and after the demise until today. Of course, the role of the enemy's enmity must not be overlooked. The extensive camp of the enemy entered the field against the revolution from the beginning of the revolution. Some people think that we forced the enemies into enmity. No, The Islamic Republic, which is by nature opposed to oppression, naturally makes oppressors show enmity. Do you not say that you are opposed to arrogance and oppression? Well, everyone who is arrogant and oppressive and every government that has these unfavorable characteristics shows enmity towards you. This is the Islamic Republic.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
You say that you advocate spirituality. So everyone who is hostile towards the spirituality of the people will show opposition to you. The Islamic Republic says that it is opposed to vices. Therefore, those who have gotten used to vices and who cannot separate themselves from them will naturally show opposition to the Islamic Republic. This is something natural. The camp of the enemy of the enmities must not be overlooked. Of course, these enmities have taken on different forms. In the days leading to the victory of the revolution, the Americans sent their general Robert Heuser to Tehran in order to launch a coup. Of course, he thankfully returned frustrated and disappointed. On many other matters too, the Americans and the enemies were rendered frustrated and disappointed. Imam's endeavor to bring about a serious separation from Westerners would have naturally created some enemies because he would not allow them to interfere. He took the current Palestinian embassy, which was in the hands of the usurping Zionist regime at that time, away from the Zionists and handed it over to the Palestinians, who are the owners of Palestine.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.